This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you're from in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are men and women around you who have been through some pretty incredible things, things you and I would have a hard time imagining, all for the sake of our freedom. And we don't want to forget that. We want to honor our veterans for their service, the sacrifices they've made. We want to preserve their stories so we don't forget that price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, sometimes even inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. And a member of that generation joins us today, Warren Smith of Fresno, California, 89 years old. But you weren't born in Fresno. You were born in the land of enchantment, is that right?
Raton, New Mexico, 1925.
And where in the world is that? I've never heard of that town.
That's up next to the Colorado border, right south of Trinidad, in the Four Corners.
And I know you came out here to the San Joaquin Valley very young, but you went back and forth a little while. And is it true that your way of getting to school in New Mexico as a young boy had nothing to do with a bus or a car or walking?
That's exactly right. We rode horse to school. In the spring and fall, it was a long ways. In the wintertime, we was about 4 or 5 miles from school.
In the winter, at elevation on the New Mexico-Colorado border, at how old?
Oh, from 6 to 9.
So you're a six-year-old on horseback in the snow.
Right. Snow wasn't that bad there. When it snowed, why, it would be off, melt off before the end of the day.
Well, you know, we've all heard these stories all our lives, and the joke is that, you know, when I was a kid, we had to walk to school uphill both ways, 10 miles, whatever. You actually, that's almost true for you.
Yeah, and it wasn't in Florida either.
Do you remember at that young age having an ambition or a dream or an idea of what you wanted to do with your life?
No, not really that I could think about. There seemed to be a lot of cowboys there at that time, and I thought, well, I would just be a cowboy. I got out here, I didn't know what I was going to do.
Was that a big adjustment for you?
Well, not really, because it was in 34, and the only thing was it was hot here, and we didn't enjoy that, hot weather in the summertime. And I remember telling my uncle, you have better weather here in the wintertime than we have in New Mexico in the summertime.
And I'm sure you got used to it pretty quick. For those people that have lived in this area, you know, and live here now, what was Fresno like in the 1930s and early 40s?
Well, there just wasn't as big a crowd. The kids would go work in the farms just before they'd hold school so the kids could help get in the crops, which they can't even do anymore. That's about the difference.
And you did some of that with cotton? You milked some cows? What?
Didn't do any cotton, but I did some grape picking. And the milking cows was after I got bigger.
Was that pretty hard work out in the grape fields?
Well, I didn't like it, but what kid likes to work anyhow?
Very good point. Let's fast forward to high school. You're at a rural high school, Washington Union. And something happened when you were 16 years old that changed America, changed the world, and I'm sure changed your outlook. Do you remember how you found out that Pearl Harbor had been attacked? Do you remember that?
Where's Pearl Harbor? Nobody knew where Pearl Harbor was. But it didn't take them long to find out.
And did it occur to you at all as a 16-year-old that you might be involved in what was starting to happen?
Not really. I didn't think about it, but the people started getting drafted in the service, and I thought, well, I'm going to fly an airplane. I'm going to fly in a fighter plane, which didn't ever happen.
But you had that idea, and well, maybe I guess before you had a chance to make that happen, Uncle Sam made some other things happen, and you were drafted?
Right. I was drafted and chose the Marine Corps because I'd seen the glory of it, which there wasn't that much glory.
This is right at the end of your junior year in high school. So was there any hesitation on your part that you wanted to finish high school with your friends and go back for another year?
Not really.
Why was that? What gave you that motivation?
Well, because I wasn't too good of a student to start with. So I was going to have a hard time getting through school anyhow.
And what did you know about the Marine Corps before you joined them?
Really nothing other than the movie that I seen of Gung Ho, which John Wayne was in.
So it's John Wayne's fault that you became a Marine?
Right, John Wayne's fault.
You did say you liked the cowboys, so there you go. He was a cowboy and turned a movie Marine, and then you became a real Marine. Were there some moments as you went into training where you said, boy, I don't know about this. Maybe this is a little tougher than I can handle.
I was in boot camp, and I asked the drill instructor, I says, can you volunteer to go into combat? He says, don't worry about it. He says, we'll get you there quick enough. First night there on Saipan, they was shooting mortars at us, and we was on the beach. We had a flare mortar right by us, and they were trying to get that. And I told him, I looked out at that water, and I said to myself, if I could swim home, I'd be home now.
I don't doubt it. I think a lot of guys in that situation probably felt the same way. Before you got to Saipan, I'm sure they put you through quite a bit. What do you remember about the relationships that you started to form and maybe the connection that you felt with the other guys who could wear that globe and anchor?
That's a tough question. I can't really think back about it. But they was needing people over there pretty quick, so they didn't really train us too long until they sent us over there. Probably within 4 months after I went into the Marine Corps, I was in combat.
Which is quite the contrast to guys earlier in the war. And by this point, had you seen and heard some of what the Marines had been through at places like Guadalcanal and Tarawa?
Not very much. I'd heard just a little bit, and it's all I knew that they was over there fighting. So that's the end of the story until I got to meeting the people that was on Guadalcanal and on Tarawa. That was the 2nd Marine Division, that one of them, the 1st and the 2nd, hit Guadalcanal. And then the 2nd Division hit Tarawa. So there was an Army Division on Guadalcanal, too, that fought with the Marines. The same division, Army Division, hit Saipan with us, too. They took a part of it. It wasn't just Marines. There was Army there, too.
So as you're getting ready to hit Saipan, you're on the ship. You're around some guys who've already been in combat. Did you hear some stories?
I was joined the replacement of the ones that the 2nd Marines had lost before or had sent home.
Do you remember some of the kinds of things that they shared with you or how at all they prepared you for what you were going to encounter?
They would just tell about different things, and I don't remember. It prepared me a whole lot, but I knew that they had been in a big lot of trouble there.
It just seems to me if a kid grows up riding horses in New Mexico and then in Fresno, that a long ship ride from California to Saipan would have been something new and something eye-opening for him. What was that journey like for you?
From California, we didn't go to Saipan. We went to Hawaiian Islands, and we trained there for a bit, and then we went on to Saipan. There was some moments he was watching when he was leaving to see if you could see any submarines sticking up out of the water. So that's about all there was to it.
And you kind of alluded to, you answered one of the questions I often ask guys, you know, trying to get inside their heads before they ever saw combat, if they were nervous, if they were scared, if they were, some say they were excited and couldn't wait. It sounds like maybe you were excited until you were actually there and it was real?
I was excited and I was scared too. Anybody that says they aren't scared is not really telling the truth. So I do know one person, though, that when we got there, he just as soon as he got there, he didn't stay with the unit. He had to get up where the front lines was, and within a day, he was dead. You got to control. You got to fight as a unit. You can't take off by yourself.
Yeah, and those are lessons that you learn the hard way sometimes, as it sounds like you did. Can you help us envision what you saw when you got there? And this is 1944, so you're still a teenager. And when you got to that beach, what was going on there? What did you see? What did you hear? What did you feel?
Well, I remember seeing one dead Marine. And the front, we was on the second invaders. First drive went in an hour ahead of us. So there wasn't a whole lot of action when we got in there. But the next day we moved a little bit, not much. And there was, to show you how brave or daring those people are, there was one Japanese soldier that had hid in a little hole and covered himself up with palm trees and laid there in that hot sun all day long waiting to get out to get to kill somebody.
So that was quite an education, I imagine, for a 19-year-old Marine. Do you remember what it felt like at the end of that day after, well, now I've seen a little bit of it, I've tasted it, and do you remember what that felt like or what you might have been thinking?
No, just wondering when it would get over with, that was about all.
what was your specific role within your unit? What were you armed with, and what generally were you expected to try to do?
I was an assistant BA Arman, so I had to carry his ammunition and stay with him.
And when you say carry his ammunition, so he's got that BAR, the Browning Automatic Rifle, which is pretty heavy, but you're carrying, what, a couple bandoliers worth of ammunition?
Yeah, it's a big bandolier. It isn't two bandoliers. Yeah. It's just one big one with a lot of 30, 20 rounds in it. But then after the first day, the lieutenant's runner disappeared. We don't know what happened to him. And so he selected me to be his runner. And one night, our own artillery made a mistake and was laying in on our lines, and we couldn't get communication back to him, to the headquarters.
So you're in a foxhole or something, and your own American artillery is coming right where you guys are camped out.
And so the lieutenant sent me back to headquarters in the dark to get him to stop the artillery. And it's dark, and you don't go running around through the lines very much in the dark. So I was pretty scared then, and I took off and was running and hollering as I went. So I wanted them to know I was coming through. Runner coming through, then I'd holler the password. And I fell down a couple times, skinned my knees. And then I went back up to the company, and the lieutenant says, "What are you doing here?" I says, "I come back up here." He says, "I thought you'd stay down there till daylight."
You said, "Well, if I knew I could, I probably would have, huh?"
Well, I didn't even think about that. I just thought they needed me.
You know, you lived it, and I'm sure you've told that story a couple times to your family, so it's not a big deal to you, but I'm just imagining being this teenager in that situation. Like you said, it's dark, and you mentioned the password, and that's, I think, an important point, because there was probably as much danger of you being killed by your own guys as the enemy, right?
Right, definitely. That was why I was hollering and let them know that somebody was coming through, and they knew the password. Now, that password was changed every day,
right,
so that the enemy couldn't get a hold of it.
What kinds of things were used as passwords? Do you have any examples maybe of what those might have been?
Something like the Lone Ranger, or just odd things like that. Something about baseball, or I can't remember of any of them that we used, but they had a lot of them.
Well, the Lone Ranger would have been pretty fitting for what you were doing there, running through the dark and falling down.
That was just the quickest thing I could think of right now.
And messages weren't the only thing that you had to carry. I know you weren't a medic, but I understand that you did have a situation where you were asked to carry a wounded Marine. What happened there?
The enemy cut in with anti-aircraft and exploded it over the top of us. That was a little herring, and one of our guys got hit bad. And, of course, I was selected because I was a runner to help carry him back out of there. I don't know whether he ever made it or not.
So this is, again, in the dark. You're trying to get some sleep or trying to get some rest, and all of a sudden, tell me what that looked like, what it sounded like.
You're not resting when they're shooting anti-aircraft at you. But, yeah, you're scared.
So these are air bursts over the top of your position?
But after a while, you know it's a danger, but the bad fear goes away. You know, you're scared, but you're not paralyzed by it.
What made that transition? What enabled you to not feel that fear?
It's like the first time you go into a football game. You're all excited. After you get in there, all the fear goes away. Mm-hmm. It doesn't go away, but the danger, you just control it. That's all I can say.
Well, we're going to pick up that story when we come back, because it is break time. And hey, speaking of football games, Warren is going to be the special guest at one next week. If you live in California's Central Valley like Warren does, you can see him at the Fresno State football game against Southern Utah Saturday night, September 20th. He's going to be the hero of the game, and he'll be recognized at halftime in 41,000-seat Bulldog Stadium. I'm going to be there, of course, and if you're in the Fresno area and you find yourself at that game, keep your eye out for Warren. And that hero of the game is something that you might have guessed is going to happen at all of Fresno State's home games. So if there's a veteran that you think should be considered, you can email the sponsor. I have the link at hometownheroesradio.com. But if you think you can remember this email address for the sponsor of the hero of the game, It's heroes at solarnegotiators.com. That's heroes at solarnegotiators.com. Again, I've got the link up on hometownheroesradio.com. And hey, good for Solar Negotiators for sponsoring those heroes of the game. We're talking about things to come in 2014, but we're going to head back to 1944 when we come back. We'll hear more of that situation that Warren found himself in, and we'll also find out how he ended up getting wounded on Saipan. Hometown Heroes comes right back at you after this. You know, one of the things I appreciate so much about the veterans we meet on Hometown Heroes is that they're real. A sincere and genuine spirit really makes an impression on me, and that's why I'm such a big fan of Educational Employees Credit Union. It was EECU that spearheaded the launch of Central Valley Honor Flight with an initial donation of close to $25,000, and the giving did not end there. More than 200,000 members know EECU represents smarter banking, but it's not just about being smart, it's about the heart. I've worked with the folks at EECU for years, and I've watched them put their money where their mouth is, supporting their credit union members right where they live in hometowns up and down Central California. From sponsoring first-class Educator of the Year ceremonies to taking the lead in sending World War II veterans on an unforgettable journey, my friends at EECU keep proving that you are at the heart of everything they do. Go to myeecu.org to see what EECU can do for you, or just walk into any branch. And while you're there, if you enjoy this show, tell them thanks for supporting Hometown Heroes.